Aslan, Aslan, I've found Mr. Tumnus. Oh, do come quick. A moment later, Lucy and the little fawn were holding one another by both hands and dancing round and round for joy. The little chap was none the worse for having been a statue, and was, of course, very interested in all she had to tell him.
But at last the ransacking of the witch's fortress was ended. The whole castle stood empty, with every door and window open, and the light and sweet spring air flooding in to all the dark and evil places which needed them so badly. The whole crowd of liberated statues surged back into the courtyard.
Welcome to A Sacred Fellowship. This is episode 166, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, are discussing chapter 16 of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. We are using traditional, ancient, and diverse sacred practices to discern everyday themes in the world of Narnia. We are using these stories to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions.
Take a seat by the gap in the castle wall, or settle in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to continue building fellowship with us. We believe that by finding the sacred in these writings of Lewis, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Hello, Catherine.
Hello there.
Welcome to the longer evenings. We are now in the northern hemisphere on the other side of daylight savings time, and it is after 7 o'clock, and it's still light where I am.
Well, it's 10:16 at night where I am, so I can't say that I've seen daylight in a few hours.
Not in a few
But I did
hours.
get to have it after work, which was nice.
That is nice. How are you? Any dungeons or towers for you?
Well, I can't tell if this is a dungeon or a tower, but I was listening to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony tonight because I had just gone to a webinar on it, and I'm listening to it at Symphony Hall by the Handel and Haydn Society in Boston. And I realized that I'm going to have to bring a hankerchy, as a Bumble Ruffin calls it, for Saturday, because if I get through even a quarter of that symphony without bawling my eyes out, I'll be very surprised. But I think that's
Like a
mostly a
tower.
tower that I get to hear music that's so terribly effective for me and always brings up very strong feelings. And then my dungeon is that Friday night I kind of got a stomach bug and it's been plaguing me all weekend, no pun intentional. And so I'm just kind of happy to be at a place where I'm starting to recover, but it's not been fun.
Not been fun, I'm sorry.
Thanks. How about you?
So the work saga continues, where again in a meeting this morning I was accused of having an agenda and a motive, and I actually had to stop the guy. I said, wait a minute. I don't know how you felt waking up this morning, but I didn't wake up with some agenda or motive that you're attaching to me. I'd appreciate it if you'd stop. And, you know, making assumptions and accusations that just aren't fair. And the thing that's great is that since I won't meet with him by myself, I refuse to meet with him alone. Other people got to witness me standing up for myself. So it was a dungeon because it sucked. My heart rate was up to 111 beats per minute. And I was seriously thinking I needed to go to the doctor. By the end of the day, my heart rate was down to 80 beats per minute. So I am not a hummingbird. And, you know, towers. Shoot, I was thinking there was something really obvious, and I think fortunately there's a few, and I guess the ultimate tower is the fact that I feel like for the first time in months I actually have a few from which to choose, and that makes me happy. I think I'm especially glad that the soundtrack won for Oppenheimer. The Oscars were
Here.
yesterday as we're recording, and to me that's a tower because it kind of affirms my taste. Like, I could hear something and say, this is really good. Though I have to confess, I didn't hear any of the other nominees, so I can't say that anybody wasn't good. But very, very happy for that. And really happy. Oh, there was a meeting I went to at the end of the day that was really positive and really good. And I'm glad I went to that. So I'll just say that because there's a lot of confidentiality with that. So I won't say much more. But that's been a positive force in my life, and it's monthly, and I'm glad I got to go to that meeting today. So there we are.
Great.
Well, the
So we
Gammers don't think there was going to be much about spring, because come on,
have.
it's spring. So would you like to start off?
I think that you were the one who is going to
Okay.
cover the verb nature of spring, and I will be taking the noun.
All right, very good. So yes, so spring can be a verb or a noun. So the verb could be to jump, to dart out, to shoot, to issue with speed or force, such as when tears spring in your eyes during Beethoven's Ninth, or to grow as a plant or to originate. The garlic is springing up in the garden, or that idea was springing up during the meeting. Archaic is like to dawn or to appear. I want to keep that one. And then, of course,
Curious how you
there's
use that.
trying to think of a good example. Like an idea springing up, I think, is like an idea dawning on you. I think would be an idea like that. Or trying to say that somebody appears and somebody dawns, or like an idea dawns on you. Yeah, I think I just said that. I'm sorry. I like that example.
Well, I'm trying to think of what a definition we would use for a light from the shattered shell spring. Because there are a few in this list of definitions that I think would be appropriate for it.
Well, but there we go into the nouns. So the last verb I have is to pay. I will spring for the drinks. So you talk about the nouns a bit.
Yeah, so we have a source of supply. A kind of tide, which I did not quite understand because I don't have that many words for tides. Or we have, of course, the season, specifically spring itself, which we're coming up on in a couple of weeks, but also a season of growth or development, specifically the season between winter and summer. Or a body or device that returns to its shape, such as, well, I always think of slinkies as spring. So
Blinky.
for me, that
Right.
is it. But then we have the origin of things, such as Middle English springen, from Old English springen, to leap, leap up, or jump, of a fountain, spring, etc. To burst forth, also fly up, spread, or grow. It is a class three strong verb. I will have to look up what the classes are because I just don't know. Past tense is spring and participle sprungen or sprungen, I'm not sure which one, but it says it's from Proto-Germanic sprengenen, source of also Nor Old Norse springa, burst, Old Frisian springa, Middle Dutch springen, Dutch springen, Old Saxon and Old High German springen, German springen jump. This is usually said to be from Proto-Indo-European sprang or sprang. A nasalized form of root sperg, to move, hasten, or spring. This is also source of the Sanskrit, and I absolutely am going to butcher this because I don't speak Sanskrit at all. Sprayati, which is to desire eagerly. The Greek is sperchetsai, to hurry. However, butkon is a attracted to an alternative derivation from Proto-Indo-European root of sper, to spread, to sow, from which we see sparse. And then in Middle English, it took on the role of causal sprenge, from Old English springen, as in to spring a trap. The meaning to cause to work or open by or is by a release of the springing mechanism is from 1828. I think you're going to be very tired of me saying all the different ways that it sounds like it's German. So please go on a little less Germanically.
I shall do that. So there is a transitive meaning which is newer after the 1870s, meaning to announce suddenly or to bring out hastily or unexpectedly. as in this morning, somebody sprung on me an accusation of something. So to release from imprisonment, to spring from the huskow, the slang meaning to pay for a treat is recorded from 1906. And then going back, spring tides are unusually high tides. In winter, they're often called king tides, and in the spring, they're called spring tides at the new moon
Oh.
and the full moon. And I think the opposite is the neap tide. I think they are those are lower tides, and springs are high tides. And it's almost like the tide is springing towards the shore. It seems enthusiastic in its size. So that's what that would be like. And then the gammers got a gander today because the lion at one point here, Aslan says, upstairs and downstairs and in my lady's chamber. So we found that this was an old, old poem, and one version of it is, Goosey, goosey, gander, whither shall I wander? Upstairs and downstairs and in my lady's chamber. There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers, so I took him by his left leg and threw him down the stairs. And one theory about these is that it comes from the priest holes that subversive Catholics would have had in their homes in England when they were under persecution. And so, and in fact, some theories even say that Shakespeare's father was a Catholic himself and got into trouble for that. So this is since the 1600s, 1500s rhyme, and there's different versions of it, but definitely there was persecution of Catholic priests during Henry VIII, Edward, Queen Elizabeth, and later under Cromwell. And once discovered, the priest would be forcibly taken from the house and treated badly. So it's possible that that is the source for this little couplet that we have in the chapter. And I wonder why it's in the chapter, if it's just something that Lewis figured everybody would know, or is he equating the witch with a Catholic priest? Who knows? Who knows? I welcome all thoughts.
That is very interesting, and personally, with the context of this poem, this is really kind of coming out of pure speculation. But they're searching, first of all, in every nook and cranny, but also they are looking for a holy thing in an unexpected place, which is kind of the theme of this going to the witch's house and liberating the captives.
I like it. Right. Yeah. So it's more equating the petrified creatures and people as the holy things, like the priest. Okay. Oh, I like that very much.
And I'm glad that you explained that because I was wondering why the heck Aslan was calling the White Witch his lady. It seemed very odd.
Right. And I even love the fact that there's a bit of humor there, so.
So, with this very now explained theme, do you have a story for us?
I do. And I always admire couples who talk everything out, you know. And I think that that's really admirable, but I'm not necessarily in one of those. But what I love is that 14 years ago, something sprang up where my husband and I both knew it was time to move. And there was never a major conversation, or certainly no argument at all. It just seemed to well up or spring up that it was time to be at the coast and time to leave Colorado. And it was as though we agreed before we ever talked about it. And that is what I think about when I think of things springing up, because I mean, it would have been lovely if there'd been some grand conversation with pros and cons and, or perhaps tears, no, I don't want to go, or perhaps, oh my gosh, I want to go, but not there. I don't want to go there. But it seemed as if the decision just sprang up fully formed. And so that's what came to mind for me in thinking about spring, which surprised me because I thought I'd be talking about the season. But when looking at the chapter, I realized there are so many kinds of springing going on. I'm surprised nobody is dancing the Springle Ring. This is a chapter full of spring, so I'm glad it's our theme. Would you like to start us off,
Well,
please?
sort of. I would actually like to turn back to someone you mentioned earlier, because you mentioned the theory that Shakespeare was related to someone who is covertly Catholic. And for me, a changing of seasons always brings to mind one of the great speeches from his plays, which is from Richard III. And it says, "Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by the son of York." And so this is talking about emerging from a long and disastrous condition, and of course it's spring, it's jumping over spring, but I think the rest of the passage that I have kind of applies to this. So it says, "All the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried, now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums chained to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front." And so I think this is my summary of the chapter, is this a made glorious seasonal change by the son of York.
Oh, interesting. And at the end of it is, "And if King Edward be as true and just as I am subtle, false, and treacherous, this day should Clarence closely be mewed up about a prophecy." So, wonderful. And we have King Edward, considering we've got a King Edward in the chapter, don't we?
Don't you mean King Edmund?
Oh, I do. I guess I was thinking of Edward, the son of Henry VIII, who was king
Oh,
for
yes, you're
5 minutes before Elizabeth was king,
right.
queen. Anyway, okay. Edward,
Monarch.
Edmund. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, let me flip back from my Shakespeare to
You're
the
Lewis.
other lions.
Wonderful. You're literary lion. Well, I'll just, in the silence here, just s remind us that we're all. That Lucy and Susan and Aslan have entered the castle of, or they're in the courtyard at the very least, of the witch, and it's full of statues. Lucy thinks it's a museum.
"Hush," said Susan. "Aslan's doing something." He was indeed. He had bounded up to the stone lion and breathed on him. Then, without waiting a moment, he whisked around, almost as if he had been a cat chasing its tail, and breathed also on the stone dwarf, which, as you remember, was standing a few feet from the lion, with its back to it. Then he pounced on a tall stone dryad which stood beyond the dwarf, turned rapidly aside to deal with a stone rabbit on his right, and rushed on to two centaurs. "I expect you've seen someone put a lighted match to a bit of newspaper, which is propped up in a grate against an unlit fire. And for a second, nothing seems to have happened. And then you notice a tiny streak of flame creeping along the edge of the newspaper. It was just like that now. For a second after Aslan breathed upon him, the stone lion looked at just the same. Then a tiny streak of gold began to run along his white marble back. Then it spread."
Yeah.
And I've kind of, this is an evocative passage for me, because I always think of, the first signs of spring, and if we're talking about seasonal, are these tiny little green patches that I see on the trees that I walk under on my way to various places, such as my volunteer work or the gym or just around the city. And it's some time before I actually see flowers or more leaves on the tree, but it's always a hint of something that is promising things to come.
And then just going back, The lion is springing. Aslan is bounding and whisking and pouncing. So he is springing all over the place. So we have the
Guy
verb and
does not
the
know when to stop romping.
noun. Right. I love it. Love it. And I love that image of a fire beginning to spread. So wonderful. And then even at the end of that paragraph, then having caught sight of Aslan, the other lion went bounding after him and frisked around him, whimpering with delight and jumping up to lick his face. And so there's all this springing going on physically. It's marvelous. Spring is a season where we think of things coming back to life, and here it is, literally. It's wonderful.
Oh, sorry. I'm just reading this description. I think if anyone heard me snicker at one point, it was because occasionally you'll mention your cats fighting in the background, and I have witnessed this on Zoom
Yes,
calls.
you
And
have.
this is what I picture when I think of Aslan and the Great Stone Lion.
Me too. It's Gizmo and
It seems like such a random and trivial thing, but on the other hand, it is utterly uncensored. It is something that is not prohibited. It is not something that is cautioned against. It is something where they are allowed to act on instinct and they're allowed to act on impulse. And that is kind of one of the wonderful things about liberation.
And that's kind of what spring becomes. It is this incredible crescendo to a fantastic climax of a blaze of color. And here we have it: glossy chestnut, indigo horns, plumage of birds, reddy brown of foxes, yellow stockings and crimson hoods of dwarfs, birch girls in silver, and the beech girls in fresh transparent green, and the larch girls in green so bright it was almost yellow. And so we have all these colors of spring in these creatures being brought back to life. You know, you think of the chestnut, which could be new leaves before they green out, or indigo could be wonderful flowers, and the reddy brown. Anyway, it's all of these colors of spring, but they're ascribed to creatures, which is marvelous.
And again, returning to a slightly arcane or archaic text, this entire passage brought to mind the book of Luke, chapter 4, verse 18, where Aslan's counterpart reads a passage that sets forth his mission in life, and it says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised." So I think that is, well, I already said we have one passage that sums up the chapter, but I think we have slightly another.
I think we do. And of course, Aslan in Luke is quoting Isaiah. So
Yes.
these are wonderful ancient images here, which is marvelous. So that's funny, I haven't paid much attention to Susan and Lucy in this chapter. I'm just so delighted. But I see Susan worrying about the giant if it's safe. And then she's concerned. Her concern is allayed, and it's all fine. And then we finally get "Look alive, everyone, upstairs and downstairs and in my lady's chamber." Love that.
Well,
What was
one
that?
of the things that I enjoy with this giant is something that I've sometimes heard is people saying that a smile springs up on a person's face, and it has this passage of it. Giants of any sort are now so rare in England, and so Wheaton giants are good-tempered that 10 to 1 you have never seen a giant when his face is beaming. It is a sight well worth looking at.
Wonderful. Well, when I think of early spring, I think of the delicate things. But here's something that's just so big. You know, the snowdrops, they last a few days and that's it. Or little buds on the leaves don't last long. All of a sudden they're giant flowers or their leaves leafing out. So these little things that have become rare. Like a giant smile. How wonderful. And then when the giant is smashing the gates, we have creaking and cracking and shivering. And I think of ice crack. It sounds like ice breaking at these points. It sounds like spring, or even perhaps the sound of a tree stretching and creaking as it grows. So I think these are wonderful sounds for spring and for hope here.
And then I feel as though we have an almost real heroic moment in right after the massive hopeless rubble. It says, "When the dust cleared, it was odd standing in that dry, grim, stony yard to see through the gap all the grass and waving trees and sparkling streams of the forest, and the blue hills beyond that and beyond them to the sky."
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have
It
that
really
on.
reminds me of Theoden looking to the place where the green land is.
It reminds me of Merry and Pippin when they finally get to run on the grass and how it lightens their hearts, even though they're still captives of orcs, far away from anybody they know and have no idea how this is going to end. And yet this lightens their hearts to be in grass like this. And yes, this is a beautiful glimpse of spring from this castle, dry, grim, stony yard. How wonderful. Wonderful.
Kind of randomly reminds me, I've been doing a lot of walking around the city for various errands recently, and on the map it will say this corner is home to this park, and I'll look at it and say it's simply a stretch of the green grass and possibly a couple of trees, and I'm thinking that doesn't count as a park, that doesn't have any near enough structure to be something called a park. And then I'm going, why am I setting an expectation on what counts as a good and verdant thing? Why am I not just saying this is a place where it is allowed to grow and this is something that should be celebrated?
Good for you, because you came like I am now from wide open spaces where a park could be millions of acres.
Yeah.
And so I remember parks like that in Waltham and places like that. Like, okay, that's a park just because you put a sign on it. Sure. Sure, but like you wouldn't take your kid and play there. However, there is this tree and there is that grass. That's very nice. Very good. Yes, wonderful.
Sorry, that's bringing to mind when I lived in a different part of California than you are currently. And in a certain city, you had to, in order to have a property, you had to have a specific amount of land assigned to your housing unit and at least one tree. And some people, the only thing they would have was this stubby little palm tree that just barely counted, but it was a yard.
But it counted. It counted. Very good.
So, yes, with this dry, grim, and stony yard, we have the miracle of all of the greenness and the life beyond.
You'll like this, and I'm sorry if I'm boring our listeners, but I was with somebody and she was talking about her mother who's in Fresno. And then someone else was talking about how she was taking care of her father. And she said, "My father's a bit farther away. He's in Madera." And we're all about to say, "That's not much farther than Fresno," because there is a town called Madera. But she really meant
Do
the
they mean
opposite.
Portugal?
She meant Portugal. She had
I've been
just come
there.
back. Yeah. Can you imagine caring for an elderly parent from that far away? Western
Thank
California,
goodness.
all the way to Madera. Anyway, so she said, "Yeah, I have to explain that to people a lot." Say, "My father's in Madera. It's not near Fresno." So sorry for boring everybody on that.
On the other hand, I think we have a lot of people rushing to their maps.
Right. Have some Madeira, my dear. That's the Portugal one. Well, what else in this chapter? I didn't have any other real instances of spring per se.
Really?
Then
Not even
lay it
one
on
of them.
me.
They stumble upon this battle. I think that's springing something on. Also, springing a trap. It's springing to life this entire thing.
Good. Good.
But also, we have Aslan's call to spring into action. It says, "Our day's work is not yet over, and if the witch is to finally be defeated before bedtime, we must find the battle at once and join in, I hope, sirs," added the largest of the centaurs.
Okay. Good. Good. No, you're right. You're right. Happy to let you have it. I guess I'm just enjoying so much the reanimation that I wasn't ready to tear off and go to a battle. So I know it's not that long
I'm
ago.
going to stop it telling random stories, but you mentioned not really knowing how much a lot about what Susan and Lucy are doing in all of this, and the mention of the sheepdog who helped Aslan getting everyone sorted into their proper order reminds me of the Shetland sheepdog I had as a teenager, who would literally herd my mother's piano students if they started to wander towards the street.
Awesome.
Okay, enough stories about old Boston.
Okay. Anything else you want to share about the chapter before we do our sacred practice?
Let me see. I'm not sure which version of the word spring I would use for this, but the part of the last paragraph where it says, "Then, with a roar that shook all of Narnia from the western lamppost to the shores of the eastern sea, the great beast flung himself upon the White Witch. Lucy saw her face lifted towards him for 1 second with an expression of terror and amazement. Then the lion and witch had rolled over together, but with the witch underneath, and at the same moment, all warlike creatures whom Aslan had led from the witch's house rushed madly on the enemy lines, dwarfs with their battle axes, dogs with teeth, the giant with his club, and his feet also crushed dozens of the foe. Unicorns with their horns, centaurs with swords and hoofs, and Peter's tired army cheered, and the newcomers roared, and the enemy squealed and gibbered till the wood re-echoed with the din that of that onset." And I can't remember what instance it is, but there is some place, I'm sure someone's going, "I know exactly what you're talking about, or please remember where this is," but there is a winding of a horn or a call to action, and everyone instinctively responds to it, and I feel as though this is a similar kind of situation.
It's a bit like the scouring of the Shire when Mary blows his horn and Sam almost turns back from the Cotton's house or something like that, but I'm sure it's in other places. But yes, they are springing onto the battle scene. I love that. Yeah, excellent. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
I think that's my last.
And what have you got for us for a sacred practice?
Today we are going to do Havruta, the ancient question of studying between friends is the word I always think of because of the Havarim word. And we are going to, about the middle of the chapter, I've mentioned this character before, but I'm going to read it and then ask a question. When all were ready, it was a big sheepdog who actually helped Aslan most in getting them sorted into their proper order. They set out through the gap in the castle wall. At first, the lions and dogs went nosing about in all directions. But then, suddenly, one great hound picked up the scent and gave a bay. There was no time lost after that.
Do you have a question
So
for
my
me?
question, we have both the us lions lion and the sheepdog who take it upon themselves to fulfill their instinctive duty. Do you think that this is something that is guided by Aslan, or is it a response to the way in which Aslan is acting?
Ooh.
My answer is that Aslan enables all creatures to see what they can do in service, and that is why each of them fulfills its role according to their abilities.
I love that. I can't really answer any differently. I think, yes, that an encounter with Aslan allows each individual, each personage to be most fully themselves. Oh, I was just thinking of a question back for you then. Wow, that flew out of my head. Well, I'm never going to remember the absolutely brilliant question I was going to ask back to you. But I think it would be on the lines of how do you think Aslan knows that that's going to be the result? And so I think my question is, is he also a thrall to these creatures, or do they have free will and it's a free choice of theirs to be fully and entirely who they are in obedience to him? What do you think?
I'm trying to put this as well as I can. Okay, I'm going to have to dip into back lore for Narnia. We know throughout the series, different conversations, that Aslan is the one who created this place where all of them could have voices, where they were able to act according to certain natures. And so it's not so much a thrall as it's almost like a gift of the spirit, for lack of a better phrase, where it is something that is given and received, but it is something that once it is given, they are able to seek understanding for how to use it best. And I really don't think I put that well.
Maybe that's what the sheepdog is there for, to help. He will
Oh,
herd
possibly.
them into order until they understand the order that they're meant to be in. Something like that.
Well, it oddly reminds me, this is not a strictly missionary story. Hi,
Right.
Andy. But as I mentioned before, I had the plans from the age of 8 to be a missionary someday, and it was more of a, when I grow up, I want to be a ballerina or a firefighter or something like that. I didn't have a clear path to it, but when I was in junior year of high school, I had to give a presentation on my actual faith and the way that it related to the version of Christianity that we were just discussing in my Bible class. And as soon as I was able to articulate all of the things that I had researched and the things that I felt about my faith, in response to all of this study, I got the mental message that this is why you're supposed to be a missionary. And so that is the closest thing I can describe to the way that people spring into action in prompting from Aslan's enabling power.
I like
Hope that
that.
helped a little.
I like that. Wonderful. Very good. Thank you. What a great thing to choose. And I love those sheepdogs, and I love watching those videos. And I have friends who have sheepdogs, and I remember last year when I was on Iona, I saw a sheep off by itself, and I was walking by one of the crofts, and the woman came out and she said, "Oh, I'm looking for my sheep." And she had her dog, and I said, "Oh, I think that's it." So she just sent the dog to get it. The dog ran up the hill, got the sheep, brought her back. And so it's almost the same question. Did the sheep have free will, or was it just this kind of blind obedience? And that's what I'm kind of asking about Aslan. And I think the sheep also knew where she was safe, and the dog knew how to get her back to safety. So I think Aslan is giving them the same thing of knowing exactly who they are and why would they want to be anything else. So I love that. And the sheepdog is
Back.
ready to go.
Well, I'm thinking of Faramir, who can lie idle when the king has returned.
Yeah.
Someday I'll stop quoting that.
No, today is not
Yeah.
that day. Okay. I've just run into some elves on the path in the wood.
I need to start rereading, but I'm almost done with Silmarillion.
Oh, wonderful. Are you doing the audiobook?
Yes, that's why it's taking so long.
Oh, but it's so good.
It is
Oh,
so good.
it is so good. I can't wait to listen to that again. Oh my gosh. All right.
Well, getting back on topic, next episode we will w discuss chapter 17 of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, The Hunting of the White Stag. And since it's the last episode dealing with this book, we will have fellowship as the theme.
Yes, exactly. And we love hearing from you, and our community is growing stronger every day. If you'd like to join our Facebook community, look for A Sacred Fellowship. Find us on Instagram at A Sacred Fellowship. You can also send an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com. Thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing. Please read and comment on Second Breakfast at our website, www.asacredfellowship.com.
We also value the contributions of our Patreon supporters. Your support of this site and hosting costs is much appreciated. If you feel inspired to join their ranks, please look at our options on www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. Perks have ranged from patron shoutouts to literary themed presents, and we appreciate every dollar.
So, did Mrs. McCready find anything at the post office this week?
No, sadly, she had nothing in the mailbox. She did have a nice conversation with the post office clerk. Enjoyed their presence, even if she couldn't get anything out of it other than pleasant afternoon's conversation.
Oh, lovely. Well, and I do invite folks to join our Facebook page. I want to do a shout out because one of my favorite things every day is the daily posting from the Tolkien Toad.
Yes.
And this is Edward Vaughan, and he's just so thoughtful, and he always has a complete diary of things happening on Earth and in Middle Earth on this day. And as it is March, and before we get to the oh so crucial day of March 14th, I encourage everybody to join our Facebook page and make sure that you're following along these final days between March 14th and March 25th. And the beginning of the fourth age again. And of course, Barad-dûr is also traveling. So it may not be a letter from Mrs. MacCready, but it's wonderful to get those updates every day from the Tolkien Toad. So I want to shout that out. And so in closing, let's remember that whenever you are in the winter of your discontent, spring is contained therein, and anything can be transformed by light and air. Namaste.
No matter you.